This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And hi, everyone. I'm Kathleen Harris. Now, this week on the program, we're going to be talking again about something we've talked about before, which I think all of us need to be interested in and aware of, and that is what's happening with our Social Security benefit. Did you know that there are ways that you can arrange to take your Social Security benefit, especially if you have a spouse, that will dramatically increase and maximize your Social Security payout? And did you also know that if you're a veteran with a certain type of veteran status, you can get expedited processing of your request for Social Security disability income? If you didn't know these things and want to know more about these things, stay tuned for the second half of our program today. We'll be talking again with Yolanda York of the Social Security Administration about how to maximize your Social Security.
Well, what we want to do on today's program is we're going to discuss a problem I think more and more retirees are facing today, and that is the one of outliving assets. I mean, if we take a look at what's happened, I think of even in my own family, I lost my grandfather at the age of 63, but because of a new heart drug that came out, my grandmother, who had heart disease, lived to 78, and my mother is 83. So people are living longer. Now, here's one for you to take a look at. The average life expectancy in this country is 78.64 years. For a male, it's 77.4. For a female, it's 82.2 years. So if you think about your own retirement, if you're retiring at age 65, you are going to spend at least 20 years or longer in your retirement years. Now, that wasn't a problem, let's say, in past generations. For our parents' generation, a lot of them worked for companies that had defined benefit pension plans, and they had Social Security. So between a very secure pension plan and Social Security, they lived rather well. But today, we live also in a different environment. 20, 30 years ago, we had high interest rates. Today, interest rates, I don't need to tell you, are at close to zero, and T-bill rates are less than 0.1%. So obviously, that makes for a different kind of investment environment.
And Jim, when we're thinking about outliving assets, I think one of the areas we often see overlooked or underestimated is medical expenses. You know, people do figure them into their budget somewhat, but they don't really have a realistic idea of how much those expenses are going to be. It's pretty much a gotcha expense. It sort of sneaks up on you at unexpected moments. So let's just think about what happens as you age. You know, if your body starts to wear down, things start to change. Maybe you have a history of dementia or Alzheimer's in your family or Parkinson's. You can reach a point where you're essentially supporting two households, the home and a full-time care situation for the person who's further along in the aging process. So the things you used to spend your extra budget on, you know, the travel, the golf, the vacations, a lot of that money and more ends up having to be reallocated towards your medical expenses. And oftentimes it's the medical expenses that end up overloading a person's budget in retirement.
And one of the reasons that this is often ignored, and you don't think about it when you're retired, planning, you know, when you think about retirement planning, it's all about getting you to that retirement date. Very little thought is given to getting you through retirement. We talked last week on the program about several articles that have come out with various opinions on, well, should you really focus on just getting you to retirement? Once you're there, you get this cookie cutter program and you're pretty much set for the rest of your life. The other version is, wait a minute, you may spend 20, 30 years in retirement. You've got to make those assets last a lot longer. And of course, in today's investment environment where we don't have the high interest rates because a lot of retirement portfolios consisted of fixed income. You went back over a decade ago and you could get high single digits, or a decade before that, maybe even double digits. Well, that's no longer the case today. And one of the fatal mistakes I see happen over and over again is people do not take into consideration the longevity and the amount of time that they're going to spend in retirement. In fact, adding to that stress, a new trend is the U.S. government is talking about rationing health care. We see it with Obamacare, and we're also even seeing it, as some clients have told me, with insurance companies, where they no longer, for example, accept or approve certain drugs or certain procedures, where individuals are now having to fight with their insurance companies to get coverage. So medical expenses, if you think about it, and especially as we age, can become a considerable portion of your budget, if not consuming a good amount of your assets.
Well, Jim, we've read several studies that have told us that an average couple will spend between $220,000 and $270,000 on healthcare and retirement. That is not a small number. Now, when we do a retirement plan for someone, the healthcare expense is an expense that we always try to make sure that we include, especially the longer-term medical expenses. But the amount that's spent on healthcare is always a big shocker for people we need plans for, especially if you think about the cost of healthcare now, think about inflation affecting that cost of healthcare, fast forward 20 years in retirement, and all of a sudden you can kind of see how just from inflation alone, not even considering your increased need for healthcare as things change with your body, but just from inflation alone, your cost of healthcare is going to be dramatically increased in the next two decades of your life. Now, last week, Jim did cover ways to be prepared for the unexpected in your life. And in a weird way, preparing for healthcare expenses is planning for the expected, but it's often the underestimated expected expense. Jim, why don't you run us through a couple of options for making sure that people don't run out of money during their retirement years?
Well, you don't have to run into medical expenses, Catherine, to go broke, which is what we're talking about today. Inflation can erode your lifestyle over time. It's almost like a cancer. It sort of creeps up on you until you wake up and you say, oh my goodness, I don't have the money that I used to have, or I don't have the money at the end of the month. We can't take the trips we used to plan, or things become tighter and tighter over time. Now, given today's inflation rates, daily expenses, you almost have to look at, as we talk about on the program, of taking a look at your expenses from two perspectives. What does it cost you to live on a day-to-day basis? And then there's all those extra things you think about, taking a vacation, golf, recreation. But the most important thing is to make sure that your basic living expenses are covered and you don't find yourself either having to sell your house, downsize, maybe resort to a reverse mortgage. And there's a number of ways that you can handle these inflationary expenses or inflation entering into your life. One would be to postpone your retirement. So, for example, instead of retiring at age 62 or full retirement age at 66, you know, you work longer. And as a result, the second thing is you build a bigger nest egg. Now, if you're worried about long-term care or some of the expenses that can be devastating, you can always take out a long-term care policy, but hopefully you're doing that at a younger age where it's less costly, and make sure you have an inflation rider. And then the other thing is to design some investment flexibility, as we're going to show you with a case study today, that not only provides for investments or a nest egg, but also medical flexibility in case one of you ends up in a retirement home. And then the last one is basically to inflation-proof your portfolio.
Well, Jim, I think as we're talking about planning for retirement, you've mentioned some of the things people can do to avoid running out of money. And I think the other thing you mentioned too, Jim, is about knowing what your needs are versus your wants. And as we've talked with people who have talked with other financial advisors about what they should do with their retirement, what we see is that there's often being offered a kind of a cookie cutter retirement plan option in terms of planning for retirement. The challenge is with those is that they are using data that is not really applicable to today's market environment, number one. And number two, they don't take the individual situation into account. So they just don't work. They're just too generalized. So what you really need to do is make sure that your situation gets custom tailored in terms of a financial plan, that each piece of your financial plan in your portfolio, as we've mentioned, has a specific purpose. So Jim, let's actually talk about some options to help us avoid going broke in terms of some specific ideas.
Well, you know, the one that stands out that we're seeing more and more, Kathleen, and we've seen this and actually recommended it, is that you end up working longer. In other words, you postpone retirement. I know it used to be a lot of people took retirement at age 62. They would get about 80% of their Social Security benefits. But that was back in the days when, number one, you had defined benefit pension plans, so the pension benefits were more secure, stable, and predictable. You also had a higher rate of return in the investment markets, whether you were looking at CDs or the bull market in stocks that we experienced for nearly two decades. So postponing retirement, especially at age 66. Now, folks, we've talked about this, and I'm sure it'll come up with the interview on Social Security. But it used to be if you retired at age 62, took your benefits, you lost part of your benefits if you continued to work once you reached a certain level of income. Then at age 65, they would reduce the amount that you would lose until age 70. Then you could work as much as you want and you wouldn't get penalized for working. Well, they changed the laws at the beginning of the last decade. And now, if you wait to age 66, you can work, earn as much money as you want, and you will not get penalized for Social Security, and you will get 100% of your Social Security benefits. So there's an advantage or an option to postponing your retirement, because number one, your Social Security benefits go up. Number two, you allow your assets to accumulate for a longer period of time, which means you're not drawing down on those assets. So you're allowing the capital to grow. And actually, it's been proven people that work or work part-time actually live longer and live healthier lives. So working longer is one option. And if we can sum up the main benefits, if you're thinking of doing this, is full Social Security benefits, number one. Number two, you allow your capital to accumulate over a longer period of time. And number three, you're not drawing down on your assets immediately. In other words, there'll be fewer number of years that you'll be drawing down your assets because you'll be working longer.
Jim, you've talked about ideas in terms of, you know, allowing your nest egg to keep growing and so you have fewer years of drawdown. One of the things we first started talking about in this conversation was healthcare costs. Why don't we talk a little bit about long-term care policies or long-term care riders on other types of insurance policies as a way of handling a long-term illness later on in life? Now, obviously, long-term care insurance policies don't necessarily take care of the inflation issues related to long-term medical costs, but they are one way of handling long-term care issues, especially if you're a family that tends to be long-lived and or have issues with needing intensive levels of care as you age.
Well, one possibility is if you want to take out a long-term care policy, I'd highly recommend you probably do so in your 50s where the cost is inexpensive. The premiums, you know, it's kind of like life insurance. There's less risk for an insurance company basically insuring you at a younger age than there is an older age. But by the time you get to your 60s, long-term care policies really start to get expensive. But here's the drawback about buying a policy in your 50s, because what may seem like a reasonable amount for health care in your 50s may not seem like a reasonable amount 20 years later when you're in your 70s. So you want to make sure you have an inflation clause to protect you for the very thing that we're talking about now that could erode your retirement, which is inflation. And it's probably not my favorite approach because it gets very expensive. Few companies are actually in the business anymore. We've seen over the last decade, a lot of companies just exit it because it got to be so expensive. So it's not my favorite approach, but it's one that's out there. I much prefer using, for example, an individual annuity policy where it allows the capital to accumulate. You can annuitize it if you end up going into a long-term care facility, and it gives you a lot more flexibility because, quite honestly, folks, you don't know how you exit this world. We end up with a serious illness in a long-term care facility with needed care, or will you die suddenly or, quite honestly, die in your sleep? And we simply don't know those things, and that's why I think having a more flexible approach meets those specific objectives because, quite honestly, we don't know unless you know specifically you have a history in your family of Alzheimer's, dementia, or things like that. And maybe then you can sort of plan for it because you know the odds or the predictability of something like that happening are much greater.
So these are some of the risks that we try to take into account when we're doing a financial plan, Jim, and you've mentioned some of the issues with long-term care policies. So far we've talked about ideas in terms of not outliving your assets in retirement. And the first one we've talked about was postponing retirement. We do have some clients who are enthused about doing that, but I got to tell you, there are a lot of people who don't want to hear that advice. But it can really benefit you in a lot of ways because, as you mentioned, it helps you build up a bigger nest egg and you have less years to draw down your nest egg. So your chances of outliving your nest egg go down. We talked about having long-term care policies or riders on other insurance contracts to cover long-term care, or possibly using some form of an annuity, a deferred annuity to cover long-term care costs sometime down the road. Jim, the one thing we haven't talked about yet is the inflation-proofing part of how to handle not outliving your assets in retirement. Now, there's not really one specific option or one best strategy to do this. You know, we've seen a lot of articles come out recently in the Wall Street Journal or from various different people who are in the educational side of analyzing what happens in retirement. We've got Wade Fow at a university who often talks about this retirement planning. The Wall Street Journal has been doing a lot of articles about it. And, you know, some people advise taking a higher amount of stocks in your portfolio as you retire. Others say less. Some say use an annuity contract. Others aren't so enthused about that. So there's really a variety of opinions. But the reality is, Jim, that we're likely to see inflation as we age. So somehow, some way, our portfolio, our assets have to be able to compensate for inflation, take that into account. So sometimes we have to use strategies that seem a little bit in direct contradiction to what is sort of accepted knowledge about retirement planning. So what are some of those options as far as inflation protection for our portfolios?
Well, to sort of put this in perspective, really what we're talking about here, it really gets to this debate that's raging within the retirement planning community, and that is getting you to retirement or getting you through retirement. And given my 3 decades of experience in doing planning, I'm more in the getting you through retirement camp because that's what you're going to run into. Because if you retire at age 66, assuming you're a typical American with average health, you know, we talked about longevity. The average longevity is age 78, 82 for a woman, 77 for a man. So you are likely to live longer during your retirement years. And so you need to think about making it all the way through your retirement. And there's nothing more undignified or scary than to go begging or get caught broke in your final years of life, either to inflationary problems that have eroded away your purchasing power or become a burden for your kids. So most retirement portfolios today, and especially the cookie cutter approach, are heavily weighted to fixed income. Unfortunately, with central banks using quantitative easing globally, I mean, even Greek bond yields are at 6% and Spanish bond yields are below 3% today. The unfortunate thing is there is no inflation proofing with a bond portfolio. It's fixed. There's no inflation unless you get something like an inflation indexed bond, like a treasury, which goes up with the inflation rate, but you're going to get a lower income as a result. So there's only 3 ways that you're going to solve this inflation problem. One is you continue to save. So you continue to build your assets. Number two, as you age, you reduce your lifestyle, your expenses. Maybe you get rid of the second home. Maybe you get rid of the toys. You move to a cheaper neighborhood. Maybe, and as I've seen this happen all right now, and there's a number of articles talking about this trend where you move to another state where the cost of living is cheaper. There may not be taxes. Housing is cheaper. Or you move to a place where basically you're really downsizing. Or another avenue is to add an inflationary component. Now, what can that come from? It could come from maybe having a part-time job so you work. 2, you own rental properties like an apartment, a duplex, something that you can rent out that you can raise the rents over time to keep up with inflation. Or one of my favorites, blue chip stocks. You've heard us talk on the weekend program. You know, you take a stock like Exxon, which Warren Buffett bought 40 million shares. Why is Warren buying it? When he bought ExxonMobil, it was 2.8% dividend yield, but Warren knows that Exxon has been not only buying back its stock, which increases his ownership, but they've been also increasing that dividend at 10% a year. You often heard me talk about Coca-Cola, which has paid a dividend through Great Depression, through wars, through financial crisis. They even raised their dividend during the financial crisis of 2008. They raised it close to 10%. Or you've heard me talk about Johnson & Johnson. These are the big blue chip companies, well-established, strong balance sheet, and the important thing is those dividends didn't change with any crisis, any recession, or any difficulties in the financial markets. In fact, they went up consistently, and that's what makes them a blue chip. And you need to have something like that in your portfolio, because if you don't, you have to ask yourself, where am I going to get the money to pay for these additional expenses or handle inflation over the years during my retirement? So you have to have some form of savings or automatic increases, which is what you get with, let's say, a dividend-paying blue-chip stock, or let's say you have rental properties, or you have some kind of job that can supplement your income. And I prefer the Warren Buffett approach. It's one of the reasons he's one of the wealthiest men in the world, is he understood the compounding of dividends and cash flow over time. It's made him one of the richest men in the world.
Well, Jim, I think we've talked about a lot of these concepts in very broad general terms. Why don't we revisit a case study we started out with 2 years ago and see where that couple is now, Jim, to see how our ideas actually apply in a real life situation. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners remember our couple, Bill and Jan Smith. When we first met them, Bill was 66 and he was retired already. And Jan was 58 and she was planning on retiring in 2 years and was going to get a pension that was going to be 66%, or, you know, 2/3 of her working salary. So when Bill and Jan came to us, they had some concerns they wanted us to help them address. And the first one is that Bill was so much older than Jan and he had a history of cardiovascular disease. So they were really concerned about Bill passing long before Jan, that they wanted to make sure Jan had income for the remainder of her lifetime. They were really concerned about outliving their assets, especially because there was this big reduction in income when Jan retired. And also, this is a couple that had been really traumatized by what happened in the markets and were really afraid of losing money in the market. So these were the concerns that we had with Bill and Jan when they first came to us. And so some of our primary goals were to help take care of what happens if Bill passes significantly before Jan. How's Jan going to make sure she has enough income? So at that time, Jan, we suggested that when Jan retired, she roll a portion of her 403b money into a 10-year certain single life annuity to produce some predictable, dependable income for her through the remainder of her lifetime. And then in terms of making sure that she had enough money to last her through her lifetime, we also suggested that they refinance their home with a 15-year mortgage so that hopefully by the time that Bill would pass away, their home would be completely paid for and Jan's expenses would go down significantly. Something else we did for them as well is that because Bill was so concerned about market risk, we put a fairly significant portion of their portfolio into fixed income at the time. Now, at the time we first made this plan, Jim, fixed income was paying around 4%. And for the remainder of their portfolio, we decided, okay, if one of their concerns is making sure that they don't outlive their assets, we've got to have something in the portfolio that takes care of inflation. So we had dependable income coming through the single life annuity for Jan. We had some dependable income coming in through the fixed income we had for Bill. Now we had our basic expenses covered. We needed to consider inflation and extras. And for that, we decided to make a dividend paying portfolio. Again, at the time we made this recommendation to Bill and Jan, dividend paying stocks were paying around 3% roughly, give or take. That was the portfolio we suggested for them. So again, looking at this from then versus now, then a fixed income portfolio paying 4%. Now, if we were to recreate that same fixed income portfolio at today's interest rates, Jim, the average interest rate on that same grouping of similar fixed income will be paying around 3%. Not only that, because interest rates have actually gone down since we first made this recommendation to Bill, his portfolio of bonds is actually up in terms of market value. So because of our recommendation, Bill's portfolio has increased in market value, and he's currently earning a higher interest rate than existing new issuances of bonds right now. So the second thing we did was the single life annuity for Jan. Now that isn't going to change much. That's just going to keep on churning out that income year over year. Not a whole lot has changed from then and now with Jan's annuity, but it keeps paying out. It's going to be paying out to cover the reduction in income from her retirement. And then the third thing we did was dividend paying stocks. Now again, at the time we made this recommendations, the dividends were running about roughly 3% on the portfolio. Well, Jim, what's happened in the markets between 2 years ago and now? What have we seen happen in terms of market performance?
Well, in 2012, the stock market was up 17%, and then last year was up over 30%. So we've had two back-to-back years of double-digit returns. Now, we don't want to imply that if you're listening to this, this is what's going to happen every year. Usually, when you have big movements like that, then what happens is the market consolidates, as it is doing now. But more importantly, your dividends don't change. They continue. And if you're with a good dividend payer, Kathleen, those dividends continue to go up.
Well, you're describing exactly what happened with Bill and Jen over the last couple of years. The dividend paying stocks, we placed them in up roughly 40% in terms of performance since we first talked to them in 2012. And the dividends have also increased on those individual stocks as well. So not only has their income increased, their overall pot of money has increased. So by making these decisions for them, this has led them to basically have an even higher level of assets than they did when they first came to us. Now, again, this is not going to always be the case. We're going to have years when the markets are down and the portfolio value goes down. But again, when it comes to inflation, you need to have something that is at least a little bit more flexible, that has at least the chance of growing over time to counteract inflation.
So if we take a look at what we did here, first of all, they needed predictable income. And that stream, you know, fortunately, interest rates were higher a couple of years ago than they are now. As many of you are aware, the 10-year Treasury note is now down to almost 2.4%. And if Europe devalues, there's a chance that more money will come into the Treasury markets, driving our yields down further. But the nice thing about a laddered bond portfolio, which we talk so much on this program, is the income from the bonds was locked in. It is not changed, even though interest rates are almost a full percentage point lower today than where they were 2 years ago. Likewise, the dividends that they're receiving are up. They've gone up every single year, and that's why you want to stick with blue chip dividend paying stocks like you see listed in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The reason they call it such a blue chip average is the companies in them are long established, stable companies. And that's the kind of thing you want to put in your portfolio. So as you see here, the first thing that we did is we took care of long-term care. We took care of predictable income. And we used a number of tools to solve this. And everybody's a little different. In this case, between Bill's health and also the fact that he was 8 years older than Jan, we had some issues for Jan because Jan was more likely, and especially with longevity running in her family, to outlive Bill. So we had to make sure that she was taken care of. She had no desire to leave her house, which was why we were able to refinance the house at a lower interest rate. But to use that lower interest rate to accelerate the mortgage pay down from a 30-year to a 15-year, so that 15 years from now, when expenses are more likely to start being much higher than where they are today, Jan will be living in a free and clear home. So you can see here the different strategies and how we use that to inflation-proof the portfolio. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
And again, Jim, I think the important lesson from Bill and Jan here again is that if you have a plan and a strategy for each portion of your portfolio, you know what it's supposed to do. You don't get disconcerted. You know, we saw the market take a pretty steep nosedive down in the first part of this year. But again, if you know what each portion of your portfolio is supposed to do, you weather those downturns with a lot more confidence because you know that you have your fixed expenses taken care of. And so you're able to not stress out so much when you see certain portions of your portfolio moving in ways that aren't necessarily positive, shall we say. So Jim, one of the things you talked about specifically was working a little bit longer and to help maximize your Social Security benefit. So speaking on that topic coming up next, Yolanda York and I discuss how to maximize your Social Security. I'm Kathleen Harris. Welcome to the second half of this week's edition of Financial Sense NewsHour's Lifetime Income Program. Now, we get a lot of questions on the program about planning for retirement. How much should I save? Do I have enough saved? Will my money last through my whole entire retirement, or am I going to run out? Most of us consider Social Security as sort of the backbone of our retirement planning, but how much research have we done into figuring out what our benefit exactly might be? Do we know very much about various different Social Security options in terms of taking it early, taking it at full retirement age, maybe waiting a little bit and taking it at age 70, how that might impact our benefit?
We've got Yolanda York, who is the Social Security Public Affairs Specialist in San Diego, California, coming up next to talk to us about different ways to think about looking at Social Security and when to file. I thought what we'd start off talking about is, I noticed that you recently wrote a little piece on benefit decisions for veterans. Would you mind walking us through this new initiative and tell us a little bit more about how it affects our service members?
Yes. So with the military population, especially here for San Diego County, as you know, we house a lot of service members. And one of the things that they're not aware of is that injured service members, regardless of the status that they are right now, if they're in the military, they're active duty, if they are disabled, they can apply for Social Security disability benefits. And that's probably the thing that we don't really look at when we see Social Security. Most people just think of it as a retirement plan. So we forget to look at the fact that it's also a survivor's benefit. It's a disability plan. So in that disability plan, if you work and pay into Social Security and you have a disability, you can apply for these benefits. So our service members are not aware of that. And as of March of 2014, what's very different now is that not only have we been expediting claims for our service members, but if you're now 100% VA rated, when we process your claim for disability, it's going to continue to be expedited even further. Normally, it takes 6 months to process a disability claim, but for our injured service members, they go to the front of the line and their claims are reviewed immediately.
You mentioned something I think a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with, which is this whole concept of disability income. Would you mind explaining for our listeners how the Social Security defines that term disability in terms of getting disability benefits from Social Security?
Well, it's pretty simple. To be eligible for Social Security disability, our rules are very, very strict about the disability that a person needs to have. So to meet the guidelines, you have to have a disability where you are expected to be out of work for 12 months or longer. And it has to be a disability that is so severe, it prevents you from doing any kind of work. If you meet those guidelines, then you will be awarded for Social Security benefits.
But as you mentioned, the processing time can be up to 6 months. Unless you're one of our wounded warriors with a certain type of disability status with the VA, in which case you go to the front of the line for processing, which I think is a great benefit for our wounded soldiers that are coming back home.
Yeah, but I also want to say, though, that even if you're not 100% VA rated, even if you haven't even been rated by the military, you're still in medical hold as you're working, you don't necessarily have to wait for that rating, because if you know that your disability, if you think the prognosis is going to last 12 months or longer, you apply today. You don't wait till you get discharged. You don't wait till you are rated. You apply today. You let us know that you're an injured service member. We will expedite the claim. Of course, the plus is if you were 100% rated, then that's even of an extended expeditious processing of the claim. I just want to make sure that our service members, our listeners, realize that, yes, if you know anyone in the military and they have been out of work for 12 months or longer, or they expect to be injured for 12 months or longer, just have them apply at socialsecurity.gov. It takes an hour and a half of their time to file a claim with the Social Security office online. And it could be done online. You don't have to come into an office. You don't have to call the 1-800 number. Just go to socialsecurity.gov and we will take your claim.
I was wondering if there's a special location on the Social Security website that these wounded warriors can go to for more information about their specific benefits as former service members.
Thank you so much for saying that. Absolutely. We do have on our website, if you go to benefits, we have a link specifically for wounded warriors, and you can get more detailed explanation about who qualifies and who doesn't and when you apply.
I was also noticing it looks like there's a www.socialsecurity.gov/wounded warriors URL people can go to find out more information about this particular aspect of Social Security.
Yes, exactly.
I wanted to transition a little bit and talk about another aspect of Social Security I think a lot of people aren't really thinking about or taking advantage of, and that is the idea of delaying taking Social Security benefits. And I was wondering if you could walk us through the basics about traditional Social Security benefits, when they start, who's eligible, and what the full retirement age is for most folks.
Full retirement nowadays for most people is 66 years of age. And for that audience, if you're born between 1943 and 1954, 66 is full retirement age. Anyone born after 1960, 67 is full retirement age. So what has not changed is that individuals can take their benefits as early as age 62. But of course, if you take your benefits at 62, then you get 75% of your benefits. And that's a reduction for life. If you wait till 66, you get 100% of your benefits. But what's more and more fantastic for people to realize, and this is why it's so good that they come into our website, create an account under My Social Security, and find out what is your monthly benefit at any given age. Because if you wait till 70, now you can accrue 132% of your benefits because it grows 8% more per year after full retirement age. And I think every financial advisor out there is probably going to guide you on to maybe the best choice to do nowadays is to maybe take your other retirement first, let your Social Security accrue 8% more per year, and wait till 70.
I was wondering if there are specific groups of retirees who are affected more or who might benefit more from taking their Social Security past full retirement age.
I would say couples would gain a lot by taking their benefits at full retirement or until 70. Let me just give you the example. This morning, I had a gentleman that called me. He's 70. His wife is going to be 66 June of 2014. And he heard that he could take 50% of his spouse's benefits. He's already getting $800 a month right now from Social Security. The wife at 66 is going to apply and suspend her benefits because she's going to continue to work until 70 to let her benefits grow. But her monthly benefit is $2,200 a month right now. So if she applies and suspends, her husband can get 50% because he's now full retirement age. So $2,000 that she's eligible for, he would be eligible for $1,000. That means he's going to get an additional $200 more a month by taking benefits from the spouse.
Yolanda, I think this whole idea of apply and suspend is really new for a lot of our listeners. Would you mind kind of walking through what exactly that means when you say apply and suspend? Why would someone do this and what would be the pro side of doing an apply and suspend situation?
Well, if we go back to full retirement age, again, a couple, a husband and wife, they're both 66 years of age, and they know that the best thing for them is to file for benefits at 70 to get that 132% of their Social Security benefits. But what they can do as a couple, and I'm just using couples at the moment, is let's say maybe the husband applies at 66, he files to entitle the wife to get 50% of her benefits. Now, remember, she's going to continue to work after 66, and she doesn't want to collect her benefits until 70. So in the interim, the husband applies, suspends his benefits, the wife now gets 50% of the gentleman's entitlement benefit. So at 70, she switches over to her own record, and nothing's ever been touched, so she will now get 132%. And the gentleman's, of course, he never took anything from his records, so he will also get 132% of the benefit. So in the interim, there was money coming into that household. And so that's the concept about filed and suspense, but you can only do this when you're full retirement age. One of them has to be full retirement age. You know, you could have the wife at 62, she's never worked a day in her life, but the husband's 66 and he just wants to file suspense to entitle her. That would be another scenario to entitle one of the spouses to collect benefits.
So who exactly qualifies as a spouse in this situation? Who qualifies as a spouse in Social Security's eyes?
Well, a spouse is someone you're married to. You have to be married for at least a year to be entitled on your spouse's benefits, and you have to be at least of age 62 to qualify. You have to be either U.S. citizen or a legal resident to be eligible for the benefits too.
What about people who are interested in filing on a former spouse's record? How does that exactly work and who's eligible to do that sort of situation?
Yeah, so divorced spouses, that's right. The marriage ends and the relationship never really does because if you've had a 10-year marriage duration, you can always come back to Social Security, even if you don't have the Social Security number of the ex-spouse. We can find out for you what the number is. Just give us the name and Social Security number, and we can check and see, is there a possibility for you to collect additional benefits on your former spouse? And if it's higher, we will definitely have you file an application. You do have to show a marriage certificate, and you have to show proof of divorce to be entitled for this benefit.
So you can actually still collect Social Security on a former spouse's earnings record, which you would probably do if that former spouse's earnings record was significantly more valuable than your own. Is that sort of the situation under which someone would do that?
Exactly. And that's always the point. If you've had a previous marriage, and let's say some people have had three marriages that lasted for 10 years, obviously, yeah, let's check them all, because if there's a higher benefit on one of these ex-spouses, you would want to apply on that record.
What about a widow's benefit? Who's eligible for widow's benefits, and when do those start?
So widow's benefits, that's a little different. Again, for a widow, you have to have at least been married for a year. And if your marriage ends in death, then if you've lasted for a year, you are eligible for those widow's benefits. And they are as early as 60 or 50 if you are a disabled widow. If you are a divorced widow, also those benefits apply to you. You can come into Social Security and inquire about a possibly divorced widow's benefit. And the benefit for a divorced widow, if you take it at 70, is 71% of the unreduced rate of the wage earner, the deceased. If you wait till full retirement, then it's, of course, 100% of the benefit. And then here's something even much better, and this is for all our listeners. If you decide to wait till 70 and the wage earner now accrues 132%, all of that benefit can go to your divorced spouse or your divorced widow or your surviving spouse. So delayed retirement credits are inherited to whoever is eligible for those benefits. And I want to share that on our website, socialsecurity.gov, we have a fantastic publication. If you go to publications, and it's called What Every Woman Should Know, I always love to share this. Whether you're married or single now, if you've ever been married, this is the publication you need to read, What Every Woman Should Know, because it kind of gives you all the topics that we're talking about right now.
Get you the skinny on maximizing your Social Security benefit.
Right. Page 13 and 14.
I was going to say that I think, you know, a lot of our listeners, one of their main concerns is outliving their income, especially if they know that once they pass away, maybe their pension benefit stops, and so their spouse's income gets reduced. So it sounds like for people who are interested in really taking care of their spouses once something happens to them, investigating this file and suspend or delaying taking Social Security till 70, or maybe not 70, but maybe a few years after full retirement age, might be an option for people who have a concern about an income situation lasting throughout the lifetime of their spouse.
Yeah, and I think more and more men, I speak to so many men that's the number one thing that comes out of their mouth is, you know, I'm just planning this for my wife because I think I'm probably going to be the first to go. So they are just setting up everything for their spouse, and they know not to take their benefit until age 70 because those delayed retirement credits, she will inherit. And it really is the best plan of understanding, you know, if you take it early at 62, you've taken a great reduction, and maybe Social Security wasn't really that important, you know, when you're eligible for benefits because you might have other income that's not going to grow as much as the Social Security benefit will be by letting it sit there.
So essentially just being really strategic with looking at all of your sources of income in retirement and figuring out which ones to use first and which ones to delay taking in terms of growth of the benefit overall. And at 8% a year, I mean, I have to tell you, an 8% per year return on investment is a nice return right now. And so if someone told me by holding off a year, I could increase my payout by 8%, that sounds pretty fantastic to me. So maybe something for our listeners to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And the secret is in our website. Go to socialsecurity.gov, come and check out our calculator. And it's an accurate calculator where you plug in your name, date of birth, personal information, and then say, okay, if I choose to stop working today at 57 years of age and I start collecting my benefits at 62, it'll give you a quote and it's an actual benefit amount. Or you can say, no, I'm going to stop working until 66 what is my 70 benefit amount? And it'll give you that. And you can play endless scenarios. So you are very well informed about that Social Security benefit that's coming to you.
Yolanda, is that also found at the www.socialsecurity.gov/estimator? Is that the same tool that you're talking about?
Exactly. That's the same one.
Particularly for couples, if you're out there and you're wondering how to manage your joint Social Security benefit, it sounds like this is a really great tool to go out there and play with scenarios about file and suspend or delaying Social Security to see how you can maximize your benefit.
And it's the same thing as walking into an office and getting someone to say, hey, can you give me a quote for this year and this year and this year? It's like it's at your fingertips. It can all be done. Just like you can apply for Social Security retirement online. It takes exactly 17 minutes to apply for retirement online. Disability, of course, it takes an hour and a half, but it's all at your fingertips for the benefits. And I think I do want to invite everybody to go to My Social Security and create an account and find out about that statement we used to send you 3 months before your birthday. I think most people remember that, where it gave you a quote of your monthly benefits.
I remember that.
And remember how it shows you year by year about all the years you've ever paid into Social Security?
I do remember that.
Yeah, you can go online and create it. We stopped sending it in 2010, so we want people to go onto the website and, you know, get that. So it's at your fingertips. I know that starting September, though, we will start sending those out only to the individuals that haven't created an account, and then they will be sent every 5 years. But I wouldn't want to wait 5 years. I mean, I am so into what can I do today to plan for the future, because, you know, right now the most we pay, the average retirement payment in the nation from Social Security is $1,294 a month. The maximum benefit we pay is $2,642. These two amounts are still not enough to live on, you know, so we need to make sure that we have other savings. We're lucky for all of those who will have a pension in the future, but most of us really now rely on our savings and Social Security.
I'm really glad you brought this up, Yolanda, because I think a lot of people out there have this misconception that Social Security is the sole retirement plan, but it was never meant to be the sole pension plan or sole retirement plan. It was meant to be supplemental only. And so I think these numbers you just quoted pretty much illustrate why that's the case. There's just no way that most people can live on those amounts monthly, certainly not here in California.
No, it's not enough. And, you know, it's basically enough to keep people out of poverty. But yeah, that's why it's important for everyone, you know, especially when you're young, you're 22, you're just starting your first job, to see that, hey, I'm starting to accumulate credits. And everybody needs 40 credits to be eligible for Social Security retirement. Disability, a whole different story. Some people just need 6 credits if you're under 24 years of age. But it is important. And then remember your key numbers for the future, you know. At 62, you can take benefits as early as 62 with a reduction, 66 through 67 for retirement age, and 65, important number, at 65, you still need to apply for Medicare. Okay, that did not change. The only exception to not applying for Medicare is if you're still working and have coverage through your employer, or if your spouse is working and they have coverage through their employer for you. Otherwise, everybody needs to apply for Medicare at 65, or you will have a penalty and you will have a gap when you do apply for it.
Thank you so much for reminding us of that, Yolanda, because I think in all of our minds, Medicare and Social Security are sort of this lump unit. So I'm really glad you brought that up, that there's actually still a need for us, no matter when we take our Social Security, that at 65, we all have to still register for Medicare. So thank you for bringing that up. Would you mind explaining for our listeners about the credit system? When you say that to receive full retirement benefits, you need 40 credits. What does that mean exactly?
So how do you earn a credit? This year in 2014, once you earn $1,200 in either wages or self-employment, you have now earned one credit. You can earn a total of 4 credits per year, which is $4,800. Whether you earn it in one day or throughout the year, that's going to give you 4 credits. So in a 10-year period, you will have now earned 40 credits. So once you've worked for 10 years and you've been earning these credits, you are eligible for a Social Security retirement benefit. And people say, oh, well, that's all I have to work is 10 years and then, you know, I'm in. yes, you're in. But remember, the more you pay, the more you will receive in Social Security benefits. Because we take the high 35 years of your lifetime earnings, we apply a formula, and this is how we determine your monthly Social Security benefits.
So basically, the 40 credits sort of makes you, quote unquote, fully vested in Social Security, but you're still essentially working to increase that benefit. So the longer you work and the more money that you make, the higher the average salary is for those top 35 earning years that then get used to calculate your own personal Social Security benefits. So like you said, you can't just slack off after working for 10 years. You still want to keep working so that your benefit keeps growing.
Exactly.
Yolanda, is there anything else going on in the Social Security Administration or with benefits right now that we should make our listeners aware of?
Well, I'm going to just remind everyone that we want folks to really be well aware of the Social Security services, because if you are receiving benefits, you can always go to the website, do a change of address, direct deposit, get a benefit verification online. You don't need to come into an office. All offices now close at 12 o'clock on Wednesdays. Otherwise, it's 9 to 3, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. So, you know, people that come in on Wednesdays, that's really unfortunate because they could have done most of their requests online. So that's something we definitely want to remind you of, the online services. And yes, you can apply for retirement online. You can apply for Medicare also online. And another feature is our news. Sign up for Social Security News so you know exactly what's going on with Social Security. Next month, we're going to have the actuary report that will be talking about, you know, what's happening with Social Security in the year 2033. Is it true that in the year 2033, Social Security will be able to afford to pay 75% of the benefits? So, you know, if you were getting $1,000, as an example, by the year 2033, we can only afford to pay 75%. That's definitely going to have to change. Congress will have to act quickly to fix it, because we want 100%. We don't want 75% of our benefits to be paid, you know, because of this baby boom generation and 10,000 of us becoming 62 a day. So sign up for our e-news and stay abreast of what's going on with Social Security.
It sounds almost like this is something we should monitor almost as frequently as we monitor our retirement investments, because it is, in a strange sort of way, it is a retirement investment.
Exactly, it is. And especially if you are getting married, you know what's in it for you as a couple. You know, strategically, you need to plan. And I'm so happy and I'm so delighted with all the information that we have on our online, because it makes it easier for people to know what's available to them. The only secret is, how do we get people to hear the message that Social Security has for them? And thank you. And that's why I want to thank you for having Social Security on your show and giving us the opportunity to share this with them.
Well, it's such a huge part of planning for retirement. It's one of those things that I think a lot of people neglect to really investigate and research and get the real numbers for when they're planning for retirement. And yet at the same time, in the back of our minds, we're all counting on it as the core of our retirement planning. And yet we neglect it. We don't go to the socialsecurity.gov/estimator. We don't figure out our own personal benefits. So again, thank you so much for coming on the program. And would you mind giving our listeners one more time the Social Security's office's 800 number and the main website where they can go to find out some of this information you and I have been talking about?
Sure. So the 1-800 number is 800-772-1213. And know that they are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. Then the website, it's www.socialsecurity.gov. And of course, you have longer hours on our website. You can do so many things: change of address, direct deposit, the calculators, a great resource of information for anyone that has a Social Security card. And come May, we celebrate Mother's Day, and I want to invite people to come and check out our baby's names list to see if your name has made it up to the top 10. That's always a great site to look at. Baby's names at socialsecurity.gov.
I had no idea that was a feature. So thanks again, Yolanda, for all this great information, especially for the new information for all of our listeners out there. Really appreciate you coming on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Once again, we'd like to thank Yolanda for all the great information that she provided. And Jim and I just want to encourage all our listeners, if you haven't done so already, please go to socialsecurity.gov/estimator, figure out your own personal Social Security benefit and the best way for your family to take Social Security, which way you should file. So on behalf of Jim and myself, we hope you have a great week, and we'll look forward to talking with you on next week's Lifetime Income.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.